Also, I would like to thank respected Hujjat al-Islam wal-Muslimin, Sheikh Fawzi, and the community for inviting me or allowing me to share a few moments with you all. In chapter 30, verse 7 of the Holy Quran, يَعْلَمُونَ ظَاهِرًا مِنَ الْحَيَاةِ الدُّنْيَا وَهُمْ عَنِ الْآخِرَةِ هُمْ غَافِلُونَ. They know the ظاهر, the superficial aspect and dimension of the worldly life. But in relation to آخِرَةِ, they are heedless. They are غافل. They are oblivious. Here, آخِرَةِ, since it's used in opposition to ظَاهِرًا مِنَ الْحَيَاةِ الدُّنْيَا, آخِرَةِ in the Qur'an is a code name for بَاطِنًا مِنَ الْحَيَاةِ الدُّنْيَا. And so wherever you see the term آخِرَةِ, it's in relation to the باطن of the superficial realm. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, in one noble tradition, he has said, "Inna lil Qur'an zahran wa batna, wa li batnihi batna ila sab'ati abtun." That barely with the Qur'an is a superficial aspect, dimension, a zahir, and an inner, esoteric dimension, batin. And then this batin, this inner dimension, has another inner dimension within it, seven times over. In some traditions, 70 times over. In some traditions, 7,000 times over. The point is that the inner dimensions of the Qur'an are limitless. It's infinite. There's no end, because there's no end to Allah's knowledge. So we accept the zahir and the superficial dimension, but we shouldn't suffice with it. If we suffice with the superficial dimension, we've limited religion and we've limited our path to salvation and perfection. إن الذين يكتمون ما أنزل الله من الكتاب ويشترون به ثمنا قليلا. Those who hide that which Allah has revealed from the book and trade it for a cheap price. Allah has revealed the book, they're hiding some of that which Allah has revealed, and they're doing this for a cheap gain. That gain may be monetary, it may be for their prestige, power, and so on and so forth. أُولَٰئِكَ مَا يَأْكُلُونَ فِي بُطُونِهِمْ إِلَّا النَّارِ. They consume nothing but fire. That was in relation to a particular narrative which happened once upon a time, in relation to those scholars of preceding religions who would hide parts of their revelation. But when we look at the batin and esoteric interpretation, something that applies to all times, all people, and isn't limited to a certain historical narrative, ما أنزل الله من الكتاب, that which Allah has revealed from the book, if we take in the absolute sense, it includes the ظاهري and the batini aspects of ما أنزل الله, that which Allah has revealed. And without a doubt, Allah has revealed a ظاهر and the batin. إن الذين يكتمون, but these people are hiding, ما أنزل الله من الكتاب. How does that apply to Muslim scholars or Muslims in general? It applies in the sense that even if they hide and they don't allow access to the batini dimensions of that which Allah has revealed. The Zahir, it's in the Arabic physical Quran. No one can hide that. But the batin, many people may hinder the people's access to the batin of that which Allah has revealed. And for these people, the fate is that they consume nothing but fire in this world. That was just an introduction to the fact that we shouldn't allow communities to suffice with the zahir of religion alone and be heedless and oblivious and ghafil in relation to the spirit of the Sharia, the inner esoteric batini dimensions of the Sharia. The Sharia has a zahiri superficial aspect. It's very important. It's step one. Everything goes through step one. Step one should never be compromised. However, the point is you shouldn't suffice with it. And we need access to the inner wisdoms and secrets behind the superficial Sharia. Many of these wisdoms over time have become extinct. And because we have been heedless to those dimensions, over a period of time, we no longer know why we're doing those actions. This mainly applies to the mustahabbat right now. But maybe if we continue our ways, one day it may happen to the wajibat. And there may be some traces already that this process is in the process of actualizing. Because we were so inattentive to the wisdoms and the spirit of certain actions, they've either become extinct, or even if they're done, no one knows why they're doing it. Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, when it comes to the batin of religion, most of his works have a stronger emphasis on this aspect of religion. Even in his letter to the West more than 20 years ago, it was this dimension which he emphasized to the West. If you want to know Islam, get to know it through the batin of religion. One of the names he gave was that of Muhyiddin ibn Arabi, someone that Imam had a lot of respect for. It may be a controversial figure, but amongst the elite and the specialists and the experts in Irfan, there's no controversy. But when it comes to the ignorant, those who are not, and فَكَمَا يَشْهَدُ عَلَيْكَ إِنْ إِسْتَشْهَدْ يَشْهَدُ لَكْ وَهِينَ إِذِنْ تَنْتَزِعْ أَنْ. Because in the same way that place, that physical place, will bear testimony against you, when it bears testimony, it will also bear testimony in favor of you. And therefore leave after doing that action. Now here, one or two preliminary points have to be mentioned. Because here, he's talking about a physical place giving testimony. And this testimony that this physical place is giving will manifest in the hereafter. However, this physical place right now is bearing testimony as you commit the good or bad action. But we don't hear or observe it. The hearing and observing happens when we leave this physical realm after death and things appear before us. They don't start before us, they appear. Otherwise right now, this bearing of testimony, moment to moment it's happening. But we don't hear, but the Holy Prophet would hear. The soil in his hand speaking, the walls saying the adhan. Perfect people, people of spiritual wayfaring, Ahlul Ma'rifah, these people here, as a result of their endeavors. But the point is this, that we believe, the Urafa believe, that whatever is a manifestation of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It's not separate from Allah. One of Allah's names in the dua of Mujir that we usually read in the month of Ramadan is Ya Mawjood, O Existent One. And when Allah has a name, nothing else has that name, originally and independently. And if they're given that name, it's through Allah, not mutually exclusive to Allah. Whatever is, and in this physical realm of existence, there is no end. Whatever is manifesting Allah's attributes. All of Allah's attributes. Whatever is, bears all of Allah's attributes. The only thing is, depending on that thing, it manifests those attributes to varying degrees. So if Allah is Mutakallim, one of his names, the speaker, one who speaks, whatever is speaks, but to varying degrees, not all to the same degree. If Allah is Shahid, one who gives testimony, whatever is bears testimony to varying degrees. But there has to be harmony between Allah and other than Allah. You can't segregate the two. Segregating the two would be limiting Allah, both philosophically and in the Irfani sense. So here, this given place bears testimony, and it's doing it right now. For example, right now, you're sitting here. If you're listening to the speech with sincere intentions, which all of you are, this is a good action. The place that you're sitting will bear testimony. If, God forbid, you're sitting and having negative thoughts in relation to the topic or theme, or the person maybe on the manbar, God forbid, there, before you leave that place, do something good. Because this will bear testimony. And therefore, you've done something wrong, at least compensate for it. Then Ibn Arabi goes one step forward and says, وَكَذَلِكَ ثَوْبُكَ, and in the same way your clothes, in أَسَيْتَ اللَّهُ فِي فَكُنْ كَمَا ذَكَرْتُ لَكَ, in the same way with your clothes, when you're wearing a particular clothing, this clothing, if you do something bad or disobey Allah in that clothing, before you leave that clothing, try and do something good, because this clothing, which is a thing, will also bear testimony in relation to the sin that you did. And therefore, before exiting it and discarding it, compensate by doing a good deed, obeying Allah, so that it also bears testimony in favor of you. Then he continues, and it's this last bit which I wanted to focus on more. وَكَذَلِكَ مَا يُفَارِغُكْ مِنْكَ مِنْ قَسِّ شَارِبٍ وَحَلْغِ آنَةٍ وَقَسِّ أَذْفَارٍ وَتَسْرِيهِ شَعْرٍ وَتَنْغِيَةِ وَسَخٍ لَا يُفَارِغُكَ شَيْءٌ مِنْ ذَلِكَ مِنْ بَدَنِكَ إِلَّا وَأَنْتَ عَلَى تَهَارَةٍ وَذِكْرِ اللَّهِ عَزَّ وَجَلَّ فإنه يسأل عنك كيف تركك. Here then in the last phase he says even things. Before it was something outside you. It was the physical place, like a carpet, or physical clothing. These are all outside you. But then in relation to that which is you and is now becoming detached from you, like the trimming of your nails, the trimming of your facial hair, or your hair in general, even when certain impurities or dirt that is of the body, pertaining to the body, is exiting you. When these things are becoming detached from you, make sure you are in a state of tahara, awe, and recalling Allah. When you cut your nails, when you eliminate your facial hair, male or female, be sure to be in a state of tahara and or dhikrullah, recalling Allah. Why? Because that thing which was you once upon a time, after being detached from you, has the same ruling as the carpet or the clothing. It's now separate from you. And that will also be resurrected. And that will also bear testimony. And in the traditions of the Ahlul Bayt, these things will be asked, how were you detached? How were you abandoned? And therefore we will be held accountable to how we detached from aspects of our own body. It's not haram, don't panic. But being accountable is not limited to whether you did haram actions or you did wajib actions. That's to save you from hellfire. But to go to heaven, heaven has degrees. It's not only about the wajibat and the muharramat. It becomes much more finer. You have to enter the world of ethics and akhlaq and makarim al-akhlaq and noble ethical traits and irfan and the world of irfan and how you treat nature in general, even your body parts. Because we believe in a unity between body and soul. It's a unity. The soul is immaterial. The body is physical. But this body, physical body, is a manifestation of this immaterial soul. The soul is generating the body moment to moment as we live intact. The soul is the generator. And there's a unity between the generator, Munteshi, and the Monsha or Mansha, the generated. But the soul is the Monshi, the generator. And therefore there is a unity between the soul and that which the soul is generating. And therefore right now, my hands, my feet, every part of my body, it's the soul, but a physical manifestation of the soul. But it's the soul, it's me, it's I, the first person singular. But this I is multidimensional. Once it becomes detached from my body, my hair or my nails, then that no longer becomes in unity with the soul, because now it's detached. In Islam, when you trim your nails, when you cut your hair, you may have seen this with your grandparents, maybe. they would bury their hair under earth. They would bury their nails under earth. They would respect it. That which was part of them once upon a time, they're burying it. It's not wajib. And then when, before trimming their nails or hair, they would always be in a state of tahara. And there were certain du'as they would always read. Because this thing is going to bear testimony against you. Don't worry, you won't be taken to hell if you don't do it. But it's the Irfani worldview which I'm trying to convey in these few days. It's something you and your relationship to the world, how you see the world. Even these things we're told to respect. Why? Because they bear testimony. When people die, whatever body part is with them has to be buried. And if their hair were to separate from them after death, it's wajib to bury that hair. But when we trim our hair right now, it's not wajib. It's good to do, but it's not wajib. At the time of death, any part of the body which becomes separated from us, it becomes wajib. Why? What's happening at the time of death? In the ceremony of the kafan, the enshrouding, and the burying, the dafn, and so on and so forth, why does Islam say give utmost respect to the dead? Don't put anything important on the body of the dead. Bury it with utmost respect. Enshroud them in good materials. Why? Why so much emphasis? Because that person who has died a physical death, for most people, Ayatollah Jawadi Awani said this in his tafsir, for most people, when they die, in the beginning, they still think they're alive in this dunya and that the physical body is theirs and it is them. They still think it's them. And so if you disrespect it, they think they're being disrespected and they become hurt. If you separate a part of their body from them, they're very attached in the beginning. Not like me and you right now. If we cut our hair, we become detached very quickly. We don't need that hair anymore. But we're told to respect it. After death though, we have a very strong ta'alluq and affinity to that physical body. Even though we're dead, but the soul is very dependent upon it, has a strong affinity towards it. Any disrespect to the physical body is very hurtful to the soul. And that's why cremation and burning the body is haram in Islam. Who are you burning? That soul is suffering when you're burning and cremating the physical body. And we're not allowed to do that to the soul. In Islam, it's all about respecting that body so that the soul doesn't suffer. Organ donation is a good deed. It's very noble. You're saving lives. It's okay. And most, if not all, of the maraji give the green light, especially if it goes to a Muslim. In relation to non-Muslims, there's a bit of a difference of opinion amongst them. But having this in your will, that your organs to be donated to save lives, it's a very noble thing, and that's good. But do the spiritual doctors, have they told you everything, or rather, have you gone to them for advice on the issue? At least the patient, the one who wants to put this in his will or her will, Do they have the right to know certain things? And they have to. Informed consent is a medical term that isn't limited only to the physical domain of things. It most certainly applies to spiritual doctors pertaining to spiritual matters. And here the patient has to be told that it's a very noble thing you're doing, but beware, there may be some suffering. Not like the suffering of Barzakh or of hell, not like that. But when you see them taking your body parts in the beginning, there may be some pain, there may be some suffering, we don't know. But at least theoretically, the risk is significant and legitimate. That's why they even say, don't put a heavy thing on the body. Respect the deceased. Now, this is not disrespecting the deceased. The deceased wanted this, him or herself. But they may suffer. It may be painful. If you're ready for it, there's no problem. And it's a very noble deed. You'll be rewarded for it. But ask yourself, why don't I donate whilst I'm living? Why is it only after I die? So these are issues that we have when it comes to the secrets and wisdoms of certain actions. Another action which has also become extinct in certain Muslim communities, but not all. The Arabs are very good at this, and they've kept this custom very well. The Iranians aren't so good at it. Although this isn't a wajib action, it's one of the mustahabat. Yeah. The Urdu communities, I think they are also very good at it. Anyway, it differs. I don't want to generalize, but it differs from community to community. And that's eating with your hands. Yes, this is one of the mustahabat. But why? Some people say, well, this was, they ate like that 1400 years ago. Now we have utensils. Wait a minute. Allah has given the green light to this action and even said it's mustahab. And you're limiting it to something physical alone? It's a physical thing, that's it? What if there are butun and esoteric dimensions to eating with your hands? That eating with utensils will lose all that meaning, inner esoteric meaning. What if that's the case? It's going to cause problems. I'm not against eating with utensils, and actually as an Iranian, that's the norm. I only eat with utensils. So you have to forgive the hypocrisy here. But the point is, we need to revive certain customs. We shouldn't be ashamed of our customs. We shouldn't be apologetic. There are lots of secrets and wisdoms in these customs. But since over the centuries, we've become ghafil to the butun of religion, these things have become lost in meaning, and in some cases they've become extinct. That's okay, but one day this will happen to the wajibat. Certain sins like homosexuality and other things, if we don't explain why it's haram to the youth, to the people, slowly but gradually, then they will say, what if they want to do it alone? Let them do it. Why should we stop them? When you just see religion, the zahiri realm, this is where you will end. Because according to the zahiri, you don't see any problem. And then your next question is, well, let them do it, there's no harm. We have to be proud of Islam, everything. And if you don't understand it, say, I don't understand it. But don't put it on the side. That's not behaving on a par with adab and etiquette before Allah's wisdom. Either you understand it or you don't. If you don't, that's okay. But don't change religion. Eating with your hands, what's the benefit? What's the spiritual benefit? When you look in the Sharia and all the adab and etiquettes in relation to eating, there are reasons and wisdoms behind it. For example, eat in small morsels, not large morsels. Animals eat in large morsels. You're a human. Tame your animal dimension. Some people are laughing. Maybe it's a relevant discussion. I don't know. I can expand on it if you want. Yes. Animals eat in large morsels. If you eat in large morsels, you would be enhancing your animal dimension. Beware. It's mustahab to eat in small morsels. These are all adab of the Sharia. So we want to know why the Sharia is saying this. Eat slowly. Animals eat fast. If you eat fast, you would be precipitating your animal dimension. You're a human. Eat slowly. Why are certain animals haram to consume? Like predators, dogs, pigs. Not because of some medical benefit. That may be a reason, but that's a very marginal wisdom. All these have spiritual wisdoms behind it. The soul wants to grow. Some people, very sincerely, they're looking for medical reasons in all things. That's okay, but don't limit religion to the medical realm. Religion is much more deeper. And so they look at the pig and there's some nitrates. Nitrates cause cancer, and then they think, oh, Islam 1400 years ago. They knew this, they said this. And they want to convert everyone they see, and they do it through the pig. And the medical aspects to it. And then medicine changes. I finished medicine more than 15 years ago. Right now, when I speak with doctors and students, they're telling me things that maybe 90% of that which I had learned has changed now. Even in relation to the way they think about the kidney, the liver, the brain, it's all changing. And then scientists then find the same chemical, nitrates, in cows. Now what are you going to say then? What a mess you're in now. Then you have to go back to all those people that you tried to convert, yes. So it's problematic. So don't look for physical things necessarily. In Islam, why is it haram to consume pig meat, the meat of dogs, the meat of predators? The spiritual reason, and the reason why these are haram, predators are haram to consume because if you consume them, you will acquire predator attributes. And then you will act as a predator in society. If you consume pig meat, you will acquire attributes of the pig, dogs, and so on and so forth. But sheep, cows, camel, they don't have harmful attributes. They're benign animals. They don't bite or sting or none of that. Or, you know, kill and so on and so forth. They don't have harmful attributes. They're benign. However, even there, Islam says don't overdo it with meat consumption. Because even with these animals, if you over-consume, you will apply attributes of the cow and sheep. You become sloppy, lazy, and so on and so forth. The meat restriction and the diet of meat in Islam was never the way it's become today. We're eating too much meat. Maybe once a day, once every 2 days, once every 3 days. Now, I don't want everyone to start changing their diets from tomorrow. But if you do have meat for lunch and for dinner, at least have a little. At least have little. But try and skip breakfast. You know, not meat for breakfast too. Yes. But when we see the prescriptions in Islam, yes, it is control your meat diet. Don't overdo it. Now the Sharia, in relation to the adab of eating, there are a lot of things. And one by one, all of them have these wisdoms. One of those adab is eating with your hands. What's the wisdom behind that? Here, why are some professions makruh, not liked? Why? For example, the qassab. Qassab is the one, the slaughterer, because when they slaughter animals, yes, not the butcher necessarily. The butcher, because in the West they usually refer to the butcher as one who sells meat. But qassab is one who slaughtered the qassab here, the qasba, yes, the slaughter. Although if a butcher slaughters and sells the meat, yes, the butcher would be a good translation. But why is this slaughtering as a profession not liked? As a profession, if everyone does it for themselves now and again, one cow will remain for a long period of time in the family. But when someone takes it upon themselves and slaughters every day as a profession, why is it makruh? That's one question. Why is it makruh to cut with a knife bread and meat? When they put meat on the table and bread on the table, why is it makruh to cut with a knife? You see, these have wisdoms here. Now I want to share with you the wisdom. I'm not saying it's 100%. I've learned these from, you know, scholars who have been in Irfan, have a lot of experience, have access. They've had strong scholars themselves. They had strong scholars and so on and so forth. I once mentioned this somewhere and a sister approached me a week later and said, I haven't been able to mentally get over what you said. For 1 week it's affected me. And she was totally against it. And that's okay. I'm not saying this is revelation, what I'm saying. These are wisdoms. And you may accept them, you may not. So if you're uncomfortable with it, don't panic. It's not wajib or anything. But we have to start introducing the butun of religion. Because for way too long, we've prevented the masses to this access, and now everything seems sometimes extraordinary for them and it's difficult for them to digest. This cutting attribute of bread, of meat, the slaughtering profession, it's makruh because you're cutting on a regular basis. Meat and bread being common foods. If this cutting becomes incorporated in you, in the soul, in society too, you may acquire this cutting attribute. And where you cut people, in quotes. And this may affect your akhlaq and your spiritual wayfaring. Now you may say, well, what about the doctor, the dentist? They're doing it out of necessity. They're saving people's lives. They're improving the quality of people. But even then, there may be some specialities in these professions where they're not saving life. They're not significantly improving the health, but it's only a very superficial thing that they're doing with this cutting, with the scalpel. Yes, there it may be problematic, at least spiritually. And then Islam comes and says, eat with your hands, because you're not cutting, and this cutting attribute won't be incorporated in your soul when you use your hands and separate the bread, cut the pieces, well, not cut, but you know, I'm not sure of the term they use, when you take the pieces or when you split the meat, for example, that is offered on the table, and so on and so forth. It doesn't want this attribute to be incorporated in you. And so in certain fruits where you can not use the knife, it may be an idea, but when you have to, it's okay. I don't want to, but in the common fruits that are readily available and usually don't require a knife, think about these things. Now, I don't want people to change from tomorrow, but just being attentive, slowly digesting these materials, inshallah, it will be of help. And I can go on with these things, but I think my time is over. Thank you once again, and I thank you for the beloved Shaykh for giving me this opportunity. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa ala tahirin.